Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times and Dominic Fifield of the Guardian. It's become a business management cliche. How does an individual or an organisation go from good to great? In football terms, we're about to find out. Manchester City are good. Very, very good. The next fortnight will tell us whether they can be great. They've won one trophy and they'll play Watford in the FA Cup final. More immediately, three games against Spurs in the Champions League and Premier League will be followed by the Manchester Derby. Win that little lot and we're in uncharted territory, aren't we?
Well, we are. I mean, I guess Manchester United went fairly close to a quadruple statistically in 2008-09, but I think they were never really going to reach it, I think, if you look at it. Whereas this City team, we know, are capable of doing it. That's what we're looking at the moment, is sheer potential, sheer ability, sheer squad power and a formula that just doesn't seem to be being challenged, apart from in the odd game, for quite a long period of time. So we know all of that, but to become a great team, you have got to come through tests and win. And one of the nice things, I think, about the fact they've got these three games v Spurs, then the United match in the league, is you want to see a team tested if you're going to declare it great or not. And this is a test. No matter what their strengths are, if they can come through four games like that victorious, and then obviously go and win the trophies as well, that is a great team. You know, United in 99, we think of the tests they came through were incredible, particularly the Arsenal FA Cup semi-finals and then having to win against Juventus and then Bayern Munich. But we haven't really, there's a sense we still haven't seen City pass those tests, but we're about to find out now.
Because in that sense, they've had complete domination, haven't they? And when you have that complete domination, you are, you know, by definition, you're never tested.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, they seem to, certainly in the Premier League of late, they've won games very early on and been coasting through the latter stages. You could argue the same thing in the FA Cup semi-final against Brighton. And that gives them, or ensures that they're not knackered, they're not mentally drained by the games. And, you know, conversely, Liverpool, having to scrap for every point at the moment, and what they're doing in its own way is incredible, but it's very different to City. City seem to have a bit more that they can give. They can go to another gear potentially if they need to, but they'll need to in these four matches coming up after, with the Crystal Palace match in between as well. But Spurs, I don't think City will beat Spurs three times in a row.
Okay.
So it's about, you know, which one of those games they don't win, and how, if they lose it, how much they lose it by, and if it's a Premier League defeat, that could be, I mean, there's no margin for error in the Premier League at all, given Liverpool's run in. But it is intriguing. They've just got so much talent, so much, the squad depth is there for all to see. Aguero will presumably come back after a little mini break in rehab and will come back firing as well. So much in their armoury, really. It is frightening.
If you look at Spurs, Johnny, what are the keys to them beating City?
Well, City have got very, very few weak spots, but I suppose if there's one, it's at left back. I watched Mendy on Saturday not press a convincing case at all that he's going to be the answer. So that's something with maybe the cleverness of Son, able to play wide, could be a factor for them. I think otherwise, the other thing that strikes you about City is that I do wonder if there's still a glass jaw there, that they have got capacity to, if they lose one goal, they can be disorientated, and they can lose another one quite quickly. We saw Liverpool exploit that in the Champions League last year, but I think Palace exploited that this year in the league. And I think it comes down to the method, you know, that they're such a methodical team. You watch them play and you can see so many training ground patterns, and you can see so much control exerted by their mastery of position and possession. But when that's disturbed, a bit like, you know, the brilliant boxer who suddenly gets a smack on the jaw, they can take 10 minutes, 15 minutes to sort of come back to the control that they had before, and that's when a team can get to them. So I think tactically, if Spurs can pinpoint that left-back weakness, but in terms of the momentum of these games, if they get a chance, if they score, I think they have to really try and press home that advantage, press it home quickly against City, because I still think there's a vulnerability there. But I'm only saying think, because as I say, we haven't really seen them fully tested yet. But Spurs have certainly got to explore it.
Mm. Have Spurs got the necessary big team or big club mentality for a game or games of this magnitude?
Well, I don't. Pochettino clearly doubts that they do, and he's urging them to become that. And I think it will, if the core of the team stays together, the management team stays together, and with the new stadium, that will develop in time. But I don't think anyone's suggesting that they've got it at the moment. I mean, if you've got that mentality about you, you don't have the run that Spurs have just endured, and you don't drop out of contention in the manner in which they have, and to the extent that they were going for the title and now they're scrapping to retain a place in the top four. I think on their day they can be untouchable, but okay, they played in fits and starts against Palace last week, and that on an occasion that was there was this distraction there, wasn't there? I mean, the opening of the new stadium. This is a very different match and test for them, but they really haven't shown impressive, persuasive form for a while now. Isn't it? Yeah. Probably 6 weeks.
I mean, they've lost 10 Premier League games, which is quite rare for a team sitting in third, and they haven't done, certainly not against City, that in the last sort of two seasons have they really laid a glove on them. I do wonder about them against the top sides, and actually whether Pochettino is unfair in saying it's mental. I just wonder if it's not quite at the level of those.
They inflicted Pep's first league defeat, didn't they? But we're going back a while.
2016.
But key players as well. I look at Christian Eriksen, and he's almost got that pre-move languor about him. You know.
Well, yeah, and that will be, that is disconcerting. The situation around a number of their players is disconcerting. I guess the appointment of Solskjaer has at least allayed the risk of potentially losing Pochettino in the summer. But I think that also goes to illustrate how they should be praised for being in the position they're in. In both the Premier League and the Champions League, because it was always going to be an unsettling season of transition yet again in terms of particularly in terms of the stadium, and you know, without even going into the market, they've held their position to at a certain level, but this is a different type of test, and if they got through it, I mean, if they managed to knock City out, I mean, that's one hell of a statement.
Yeah. To do that, they've probably got to win Tuesday night at home.
Yeah.
Kevin De Bruyne, who's another one who's had a fairly long break, so he's pretty rested. You know, he poo-poos the idea that the stadium will have any bearing on the tie. Do you agree with that?
I do. One question I don't have about the City team is their ability to handle all sort of circumstances and shut that out. I think they're so professional that doesn't come into it. And I say that having seen them at Newport in a really, one of those really difficult FA Cup settings. Difficult pitch, you know, Newport were brilliant, and the way City came through that with great comfort in the end. The Swansea game, the position they were in against Swansea, going to Schalke, being against the odds, you know, I think in terms of hostile environment training, they've had that from Pep. They're pretty good at that. I think they're too professional those things to come into it. It'll have to be won on the pitch, not by the stadium.
Mm. Yeah, there's an element, you know, as we've already mentioned, of predictability about City. You know, they're almost too good for the common good, if you know what I mean. In that context, let's look very briefly, if we could, at forward to the FA Cup final. You know, it was a heck of a win by Watford, and you know, incredible, you know, self-reliance, if you like, by Troy Deeney. Are they up for giving City a game? Because we desperately need someone to give them a game, don't we?
Yeah, we definitely clearly do. Mm. And yeah, I mean, I thought either Wolves or Watford would give City a game on a one-off occasion. I actually thought the Wolves might give them a better game because of the way that they play. Watford would be proactive. Wolves would have sat back and hit them on the counter. But what Watford achieved at Wembley will give them belief that there's no reason to be daunted by Manchester City and a first FA Cup final in what 35 years. Mm. I imagine that we'll see Delafoe start the game. I mean, I still can't get over the elasticity of his right ankle for that. Incredible. For that first goal.
Yeah.
Absolutely astonishing finish.
But also the brain to actually conceive that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the type of skill that you'd expect of a Manchester City forward, really.
Well, it could be next year.
Well, don't. I mean, it's frightening that. But they will have a chance, definitely. And you know, Troy Deeney ruffling up a defence, yeah, that's conceivable. Yeah. I mean, if Doucouré, who's, you know, established as one of the best midfielders in the Premier League, plays at his top level, then, you know, they've got someone there that can disconcert Fernandinho potentially. And we don't know what, at that stage, the other distractions for City might be. So it's there's a chance.
I think they've got a brilliant manager as well. I think Gracia is real contender outside Klopp and Pep for manager of the year. And one of the things I like most about him is his approach to the big games. He goes in to win them. He's not... I don't want to decry Chris Hughton because he's such a, you know, such a competent manager himself. But that damage limitation thing that we saw from Brighton, you don't get that from Watford. They will come armed with a plan. He did that in Spain. You know, he had some big wins against Barcelona and so on in Spain. But he'll come with some sort of idea of trying to win the game. Sometimes it doesn't work and Watford will get beaten 4 or 5-0. But they will not be there just to try and contain City and then nick something from a set piece. He'll look at elements in the game that he thinks he can exploit, and that's going to make for a better final, I think, than the kind of Brighton versus City dynamic that we saw in the semi.
Yeah, you mentioned Barcelona there, Johnny. Let's look at the Champions League as a whole. You know, Barcelona, obviously, Messi, 42 goals and counting. Pick your accolade for him. You got Ronaldo, bought to win the Champions League for Juventus. How much will this season's competition be decided by individual genius?
Well, it's individual genius against two utterly magnificent collective English teams, isn't it? Liverpool and Manchester City. And then you might throw in Ajax into the mix, playing against Juventus in these quarterfinals. With their collectivity and youth and sort of different things that they bring to the party. So it's a fascinating dynamic. You know, the two best players, certainly of the last 40, 50 years, maybe, against arguably, you know, the best manager of that period in Pep Guardiola and two big collective teams. But, you know, Messi's got enough in him to win any game. But if he was up, if there was a Barcelona versus City final, you know, if there's one person that might have a fair idea of how to control him, it's Guardiola. That'd be incredibly interesting to watch. It's a shame Ronaldo, even if he plays against Ajax, won't be, I think, fully fit at his best, because his willpower in the Champions League as well is something incredible.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Mm. I mean, the impact he keeps making, the targeted impact, is just ridiculous.
Yeah. If it is going to be a City-Barca final, you know, that means that Manchester United will have failed. Let's look at that tie at Old Trafford. Again, a bit of a similar question as to earlier. What do United need to do to overcome a Barca team who are, 11 points clear in La Liga? And they know these type of games, don't they?
Well, they do, but they usually lose them. away from home in the knockout stage. And I think it's 3 years since they last won one away from home in the knockout. So there are areas that United can look at. I mean, if United can include a Martial and a Rashford and play with pace, and they'll have to soak up a lot of Barcelona possession, presumably, even at Old Trafford. But if they can hit them quickly on the counter, then, you know, Busquets has developed a turning circle, which is useful for United. I mean, he's going to rely a lot on Rakitic at his side, I guess. The defence, yeah, they can get at that defence at pace. But it's just, you don't want them to become too sidetracked with stopping Messi and Suarez, who have obviously unbelievably prolific again. And Suarez has found his scoring form as well in recent times. But there is hope there. Mm. If they can come away with a lead from that first leg, which, you know, they've then got to sort of avoid tends to happen at Camp Nou, albeit not often from the quarterfinal stage on in recent years.
That's right, yeah. I mean, they can play at Premier League pace, which I think is the trump card, particularly with La Liga being a little bit uncompetitive in the last couple of years. They can force Barcelona to suddenly have to play at a tempo that they haven't played regularly for a while. And they have got pace in the break, as Dom said. The fact they were able to kind of shake PSG and by using that shows you what's possible for them. I just keep having visions of Messi against those United defensive players and defensive midfield players at Camp Nou, and just, I can't see them controlling him enough. And Luis Suarez has scored 173 goals for Barcelona now, so that's a bit dead. He only went there yesterday, didn't he? You know, so there's more than just Messi, of course. If United do anything, it has to be done this week.
And actually, it's interesting, you throw Coutinho in the mix as well.
Yeah.
Going back to England.
Yeah, and he's been linked heavily with United, hasn't he? Whether that move would ever come about, I'm not sure. But he's probably got a point to prove still to Barcelona supporters and to that club that he's got the sufficient pedigree and calibre to excel there.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned sort of, let's call it rumour FC. You know, the number of players who are going to go to United now, number of players who are going to be shipped out. What's the reality of all that, do you think?
Probably half the number of names that have been mentioned. I mean, there was a point last week where there were about eight names that would cost in excess of £500 million, potentially. There are areas that they clearly need to strengthen. And
right back, defensive midfield?
Yeah, and maybe at centre-half, definitely.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But they will be putting out feelers there. But, I mean, some of the links have been slightly baffling, I have to say.
Yeah. I have found in reporting on Solskjaer at United that it's a pretty easy thing to just say, what would Fergie do? And know that that's probably going to be the answer. So I think Fergie in this situation would be looking at young Premier League based talent more than anything, trying to sign players from rivals, and probably wouldn't be sort of dipping into the more obscure European signings. That's not what he did, and I think that's what Solskjaer will go for as well. I think you're looking at your Declan Rice's, Wan-Bissaka. I think Coutinho would be possible because of that Premier League familiarity, but I kind of expect, and particularly with the fact they haven't gone for a director of football yet, I don't expect a kind of clever, if in inverted commas, transfer window from United. I think they might go for something fairly obvious, which is youth and what they know.
And English talent.
And preferably English talent. And the two I mentioned, I think, would be, they'd be the classic Fergie signings. Best young defensive midfielder England have produced, I think, you know, in a generation, tailor-made for United to try and snaffle. That's what Ferguson would have done. And sorry to say it with Dom here, but Wan-Bissaka just looks like the kind of player that fits into the United way of doing things all day long, with his energy, his personality, and his ability as well.
He's ready for the move, isn't he?
Actually, I don't think he is. I think he's got another year left in him at playing every week. I mean, I'm sort of... He's been linked heavily with City as well. I'm just thinking, why would he go to City and play second fiddle to Kyle Walker? I mean, United would make more sense than that, but I think we also have to bear in mind that he only has to look across the dressing room at Crystal Palace at a teammate who went to United and didn't work out. It took him a while to get back on the rails, but he's a kid with a lot of potential, raw potential. He's played out of his skin for this first full season. But we are talking about 14 months, 15 months of professional career. And he was a winger before that. Mm. So although he's got the talent, I mean, he's not on a massive wage. It's not as if Crystal Palace would be looking to move him on. And it would then take a massive bid for United to secure him.
Yeah, there's a lot of ducking and diving going on, obviously, around United at the moment. You've got Lukaku's agent saying that, well, he might not be happy, he wouldn't mind moving on. You've got, you know, the usual Pogba psychodramas going on, and Herrera probably going to go to PSG, if what we read is correct. Who's going to be leaving Old Trafford, do you think?
Well, I don't see the Herrera situation as cataclysmic for United at all. I think Herrera's fine, but he shouldn't be a starting midfielder for Manchester United in terms of the standards they need. I think Mata's another one that's slated to leave, and great player as he's been, he's quite old. I think they can afford to lose him. And Lukaku's someone that doesn't fit into Solskjaer's blueprint, really. If they could get a huge fee for Lukaku, who I think, you know, he's got his attributes, but I'm not sure they're Solskjaer attributes, then I think that'd be fine as well. I think if they could get rid of Sanchez, that'd be a huge bonus for them. And then the others are like Darmian and so on. So there's actually a lot of players that they could do with moving on. I think the one player that they won't want to move on is Pogba. 89 million actually is a fairly, doesn't get you that much these days at the top of the game. At the time, it was a ridiculous transfer fee. Now, even if you say, even if you take the argument that Pogba isn't as good as he's been hyped up to be, he's flawed, all that kind of stuff, his attributes are undeniable. So even to get a kind of flawed genius takes more than £89 million these days, and he's 26. I think his contract's 2021. So I think what might be being played out there is a game that's really going to hot up next season with a view to a move in 2020. But he's the situation, I think, that Solskjaer will look to have under control, because that could become toxic. We know, because of, you know, Mino Raiola's ability to detonate grenades.
Well, how do you see Liverpool at the moment, Dom? You know, they've got more points, more wins than in their title-winning season of 89-90. Mm-hmm. Yet, they're in this dogfight with City for the reasons we talked about earlier. Where are they going into Europe and Champions League?
Well, they've got a kind tie, on paper at least. They will come up against a Porto team still smarting from the humiliation they suffered at the Dragao to Liverpool, was it 13 months ago, 14 months ago? When Liverpool won 5-0 there. And I think we've already had the sort of messages coming out of the Porto dressing room. This is all about revenge this time. But I really think that Liverpool, they won't be distracted by what's going on in the Premier League. They will get through this tie and take them into the semi-final stage. I've seen them a couple of times recently, and you don't look at them, they're not playing the expansive football that they did last year, obviously. But they've got this resilience and belief about them which is relentless. Southampton on Friday night last week was...
You were there, weren't you?
Yeah, incredible. And just from a shocking start, absolutely, where they clearly didn't know what hit them. First 15 minutes, they were all over the place, very subdued. And yet they summoned this spirit within them to get level. And then actually, when we all talk about City strength in depth, well, actually Liverpool put on Henderson and Milner and they made a massive difference from the bench. I mean, when Alden and Alexander-Arnold, for once, weren't at it, they looked as if they were jaded, whereas, you know, two experienced older heads came on and really imposed Liverpool's style on the contest. And although the two goals they scored later on were counter-attacks, Liverpool were the dominant team throughout that second period. I just think they gain so much psychologically from winning matches like that. Most of their recent wins, I mean, look at that. They went behind to Burnley. They were pegged back by Bayern, pegged back by Fulham. Yeah, pegged back. I mean, they react well within games, and I think that does bode well.
What does that tell us about the method of preparation and the individual and collective character of the team?
Well, I think it tells us that Klopp, first of all, has done fantastic job in building that team and its belief, its personality, its mentality, in the way he's kept it together, the way he's used both triumphs and defeats to kind of improve the mentality. I think it tells you about the influence of Van Dijk, who's just I don't think I've seen a player project so or emanate so much assurance, you know, that spreads to. I've never seen somebody dominate with his personality really to the extent that Van Dijk does. And I think it's also fantastic recruitment. I think it's a brilliantly put together team where they're not looking at just talent, but they do a lot of work into players' personalities and mentalities. I don't think there's a single player with a questionable mentality, and they are doing, which is something that I think is almost impossible, which is insulating themselves from the pressure that comes with trying to win a title for Liverpool. That I've seen over the last 20 years of reporting on the club, that they seem to be reacting, as Dom noted, week on week to situations where that dream could suddenly die, and they keep coming back. So extraordinary in terms of mentality. Definitely City's equal, if not superior, in that particular attribute.
If you look at the standards are unprecedented in many ways, aren't they, in terms of, you look at Liverpool drop 2 points in six games, whereas City, I think, have won the last eight in
City,
in the
have won that 22 out of 23 if you count the capital ludicrous. The League Cup final.
So how can Liverpool maintain that level against that sort of rival?
I don't see anything in Liverpool's running that's going to see them dip at all. I mean, they've got a very, very winnable five games left in the league.
Liverpool need to win five games. Yeah. And I think if they win five games, they win the league. I might be wrong, but I think there's a pretty good chance City will drop a game somewhere, whether it's Manchester United at Old Trafford, whether it's Tottenham in the league, whether it's something like Leicester, which is a difficult game for them, the standards Leicester are setting now under Brendan Rodgers. So if Liverpool win five games, I think they win the league, and that's not too much to push, is it? That's not too big a task to put in front of a set of players.
Mm. You agree with that?
Yeah, I do. You know, go back to Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool, that they faced a difficult home game against Chelsea, but they knew that if they won it, they would go on to win the league.
They got Chelsea on Sunday.
But it's a very different Chelsea these days that they're up against this weekend. I mean, the Chelsea that, away from home in particular, I think it's four defeats in six, and quite frankly, they should have lost at Cardiff as well. I just look at Liverpool. The two hardest games Liverpool have got are Chelsea at home and Wolverhampton Wanderers at home the last day. And I think they've got enough personality and quality to beat those two teams in the home matches. So I think I'd be surprised if they dropped a point, to be honest. If they did drop a point, they'd be kicking themselves because they'd be throwing it away then.
Put it this way, I'd rather be in Liverpool's position than City right now. Mm.
We were talking off air about the influence of Pepin Linders, good piece in the Times. Can you articulate how much he's contributed since coming into that role at the start of the season?
It's been a huge impact. We've got to remember that when Buvac left a year ago, that was seen as complete crisis for Liverpool, because this was Klopp's best mate, his right-hand man. This was the so-called tactical genius leaving. And, you know, not only has his impact not been, his departure, the impact that's not been felt, but I think Liverpool have improved tactically. And I think it's Linders working with Klopp. They had an affinity right from the start when Klopp arrived. Linders was under 18's sort of bridge between the first team and the youth academy, and Klopp liked him straight away. And I think you can now see two men working together really well. And what he talked about in the interview in the Times was fascinating, because he was talking about the tactical work they've done in making the midfield play closer together positionally, the three midfield players at all times, so that when they lose the ball, they're in the perfect position to counter press. Really small detail, but if you think about how Liverpool are playing a less expansive brand of football, and yet they're scoring just as many goals as they did before, and they're losing fewer goals than ever, there's more, I guess, what you'd call tactical efficiency in the team. And I think Linders is a part of that,
because it's in those small details and, you know, with those almost unrecognisable figures. I've been doing some research, book research, and his name kept popping up when I was talking to coaches. Apparently, he did an unbelievably good session for the Welsh FA of all people, and that's what a team is, isn't it? It is a collective, and sometimes, you know, the people, because we live in an age of hype. Everyone knows, big players, big managers, but the people underneath are the ones who sometimes make the decisive difference.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that, let's say, with England, the contributions of the different people that Southgate's put around him. And I think you see that at Liverpool. I mean, Andreas Kornmeier is another one, the fitness coach that came from Bayern. The Liverpool are lasting the pace now in seasons much better than they did when Klopp arrived. They're retaining intensity and lasting seasons, and that would be down in part to his work. And Leinders is I mean, I've interviewed him. It's like speaking to a kind of a young boffin. He's 100 miles an hour with his thinking. There's an incredible football brain in there. And sometimes you're sort of struggling almost to follow what he's saying. But he's so bright, and that's being put to use. And as you say, Mike, it's not about a coach anymore, a super coach. It's about a team around them, because professional football's just become so, you know, refined, so kind of marginal gain led that you have to get more than just one thing right.
Mm. Let's go from the arguably sublime to the apparently ridiculous. You know, you're going to Prague with Chelsea this week, Dom.
I won't be ridiculous. Very sensible.
You know, what do you expect to find? And give me a read on the Sarri situation.
It's interesting, actually, Johnny saying that it's not about the super coaches anymore. It's exactly what Chelsea recruited, somebody that they thought they could transform everything with one man and his philosophy, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
It just hasn't worked. I mean, they've... There's an amazing contradiction at the moment in Chelsea in that they are a team that are uncomfortable playing the way that their head coach wants them to play. There's discontent in the stands. The fans don't like the style of football. It's not attractive to watch. It contrasts badly with Pep Guardiola's style, and even with Jurgen Klopp's refined style this year. And yet, Chelsea are a point off third place and destined, I think, to reach the Europa League final. So, still got two routes open to them to reach the Champions League.
Because if they win this one, they've got Benfica or Eintracht Frankfurt.
The way that they play in Europe, it's almost like they're liberated from a lot of the toils that they're enduring in the Premier League. But they haven't been touched. They haven't been challenged properly in Europe yet. And I think that from now on, possibly beyond Slavia Prague, they will be challenged in the semi-final and obviously in the final in Baku. There's a temporary truce on at Chelsea at the moment because they beat Brighton 3-0 last week.
Is it that random?
It's astonishing. I mean, I thought on Sunday, the 3 days before that, when they played at Cardiff, that was the most toxic I've heard a football stadium or a football support since Benitez came to Chelsea.
Yeah.
And it was the amount of poison coming down from the stands, and, you know, arguably justifiably to a lot of things, the stubbornness and the refusal to pick in that game the kid that had just done so brilliantly for England a few days earlier. But as it's turned out, a simple selection of Hudson-Odoi and Loftus-Cheek on the Wednesday, and all that poison dissipated, and you know, life is rosy again for another 5 minutes. See what West Ham do to them on Monday. It's a soap opera, but it's sort of lurching from one extreme to the other. There's no happy medium at Chelsea, and it probably never will be under Sarri.
It's funny Dom mentioned Benitez there. There could be a parallel in Sarri winning the Europa League and still being deeply unpopular. And I remember being in Amsterdam the trip Chelsea won the Europa League, and getting in the lift the morning afterwards with a couple of Chelsea fans, and they were going, yeah, he's got to go, hasn't he? He just won them the Europa League, but they just weren't having him, didn't like him, and he had to go despite winning it. And I think that's the territory Sarri could find himself into.
Yeah, and also it won't help him because presumably Hazard is off, is he?
Well, he's trying his darndest, isn't he, to bring those matters to a head. It's hard. It's going to be very hard to keep him, whatever the situation with the transfer ban is. So I think that is a yes. And it then moves on to, do they also lose Hudson-Odoi, which would be catastrophic, I think, given everything. But that's very possible.
That's a more intriguing situation, Hudson-Odoi, than Hazard, because I do think even within the club now that they accept that Hazard will go, and that maybe this is the time to sell. They want to lose him for nothing. They can't afford to lose him for nothing next summer. No. So you sell him this summer. And I think their talk's planned late this week with Real Madrid, second round, so maybe there'll be some progress on that. But Hudson-Odoi is a kid who is worshipped by the supporters, who is talismanic in terms of the academy there, is a source of inspiration for the kids at that academy,
a proof that you can get into the first team setup, the current poster boy for the academy. And yet he's also a kid that handed in the transfer request in January because he wasn't getting enough game time, had the balls to do that. I mean, that is incredible. Yeah. And actually has his heart set on a move to Bayern Munich and probably still does. And yet he's still worshipped. His, you know, fans chanting his name, you know, one Premier League start behind him. And he is a breath of fresh air. He's fearless in the same way that we've seen all those, that crop of young players come through into the England setup and play with this fearlessness. That is Hudson-Odoi. And if Chelsea lost him, I think it would send out the worst message possible.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely, I mean, it would be cataclysmic for the academy, and it would leave the club looking as if they didn't know where they were going at all.
Totally.
Where are Arsenal going? you know, they've got Napoli in the Europa League. Yeah. They've got the second leg away from home, which is ominous given their away form. Does that away form signal a basic lack of character?
I think it signals a lack of overall class, actually. I think there's a big similarity between the Arsenal situation and the United situation, which is probably why they're almost identical in the league, which is deeply flawed squads in terms of their composition, some real talent at the top end of the pitch, and some dross elsewhere, let's be honest. And that's brought to bear when things get really difficult away from home. Quite often the defence buckles, can't keep a clean sheet, midfield can't control a game. I think you can look at United in similar terms, and then of course you're talking about a manager who's having to try and clear up a mess left from what came before, which is another parallel. That's before you talk about characters. It's fair to raise that, Mike. I do wonder about the character of certain players. You know, probably need to list them, but we can, you know, let's just say Mkhitaryan, Ozil, etc., etc., etc. But I think this is more fundamental than that. I think they need better players. Yeah. They need a clearer identity, and I don't actually think that's a coach's fault. I think that's just what he's inherited. Mm. And like United, this is a huge summer for them, and Napoli is probably the most difficult draw they could get because of what the Sao Paulo will be like and because of Arsenal's away form.
Mm. Are they likely to make the top four?
Well, I thought that they were showing the signs that they could sort of muscle their way into that, but I think I'm right in saying they've only got 2 of 6 games left at home and the others are all away, and on the basis of that alone, no, they're not going to make the top four. I think Spurs will have a little bit of a boost with the new stadium now, so that they will probably recover from this blip and finish in that, probably finish third. And then it's really whether Chelsea get their act together in any way, and I don't really think they will, to win or to get into that top four, to finish in that top four. And whether United, because United have been iffy recently as well. I mean, their form hasn't actually been that encouraging.
I agree that Chelsea and Spurs are, I think, they're better teams, or better first 11s than the other two. They should do it.
Yeah.
But there's reasons to wonder whether, for both of them, whether they can.
Mm. Some questions, if I may, from the listeners and the viewers. We'll start one from Michael Murphy. What roles and impact, if any, do the panel expect the Liverpool players returning from long-term injuries to have on the run-in? He mentioned specifically Gomez, the Ox, and maybe even Brewster.
Well, Gomez is the likeliest to have the biggest impact, I think. Although Matip's played well, Gomez has got a bit of extra quality and tremendous recovery pace, and maybe Matip and Van Dijk between them don't have that, so that adds an attribute to the defence. Fantastic player. Ox is, I'm just not sure if he's, even if he puts a few games together, whether we'll really see the Oxlade-Chamberlain until next season that we know, because his game is based so much on energy and dynamism, and he's still coming back from such a difficult injury. Brewster might be a wild card, but they've got a great wild card in Daniel Sturridge to play, and I think Sturridge has still got it in him to have a big goal coming off the bench this season. So of those three, yes, Gomez can can add a little bit extra and have an impact before the end of the season.
Liverpool squad that Sturridge didn't even make the bench exactly. on Friday. Yeah. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Another Liverpool question for Dom. This is from George Murray. Why has the possibility for an historic Premier League and Champions League double gone under the radar? Liverpool will likely make the semi-finals and top of the league, but all the talk is of the Man City quadruple.
When we say historic, do we just mean in terms of Liverpool?
They've done it before. They did it in 77. Didn't
United did it in 2008, 99.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not historic. Quadruple would be. There you go.
There you go, George. Russ Merlis, he'd love to hear who you all think wins what trophy and the reasons why.
Well, okay.
So let's simplify that. How many are City going to win?
City are going to win three. And I think I would bet on Liverpool winning the league. I thought that before the Spurs game, I thought that was the pivotal fixture for them and they won it. City are great, so I wouldn't want to have a bet. But as I said previously, I would rather be in Liverpool's position. So let's say City will win three and Liverpool will win the one they really want.
Dom?
Well, I did something for The Guardian last week, which I had City down to win two. I had Juventus to win the Champions League and I had Wolves to win the FA Cup. And on that basis, I suppose City will now probably... I thought Wolves were suited to play City in the Cup final. I'm not sure Watford necessarily will be, although they will give it a go. So I'll say City will win the... mind you, I had City to win the league as well. Yeah, OK, well, add three, yeah. OK, having said that Liverpool are going to win all their games and that City might drop points in the show, I'm now going to say that City are going to win the league.
Right. So who's winning the Champions League?
Juventus.
Juventus, right.
Juventus. Yeah, okay. Ian Hamilton, despite the last few results, can United do a miracle again? And who are United's key players if they are to do that?
Yes, they can do a miracle. It's not impossible for them because of what we've outlined. And it has to be Rashford, I think, more than anything else. Rashford on the break, Rashford, Martial and Lingard, the kind of unsung ingredient. Not sure about Pogba v Real Madrid, but v Barcelona. But yeah, those and De Gea. Yeah, De Gea's going to have to be Superman again in the new camp.
Okay. Gerd asked... will the new stadium attract the players Spurs need to make that next step up, the last step up?
The new stadium and the money that Daniel Levy is willing to pay them could attract the players to make that last step up. I think James Ollie in The Standard wrote last week that a number of those players are fringe players or even players like Kieran Trippier might be allowed to move on in the summer.
Talking about 12 players moving out the doors.
I mean, you never get that many move. So you're probably talking at most 4 or 5 of those 12. But if there is a bit of a change over there, I do think they'll have the clout to attract pedigree. And that's always been the plan, isn't it? You know, get the stadium, get that ready, and then you can kick on to the next level. If they don't do that, then Pochettino won't be there very much longer. So, over to Daniel Levy, really.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Right, a name we all know, Phil Dorward.
Ah, yes.
What do the panel think is the all-time greatest achievement by a British team in the history of European club football?
Right, OK, well, I know what Phil wants. Phil's a Dundee United supporter, so he's not going to get that. He's going to get the answer I think he knows I'm going to give. I think there's two. One is Aberdeen beating Real Madrid to win the Cup Winners' Cup final. But actually, my real answer would be Celtic. I have to be honest. I think Celtic in 1967, the story of the 11 players that you know, 10 of them came about 5 miles from the ground, and the other one, the foreigner, came 20 miles from the ground on the Ayrshire coast. Built by Jock Stein, beating the most extraordinary European force of the time in Inter Milan, who were just unstoppable at that point, with the brand of football that they played, breaking the glass ceiling for British clubs. A truly historic, great team that then won 9 in a row, won 5 trophies that year. I mean, forget City's quadruple, they won 5 if you count the Glasgow Cup, which was a big trophy in Scotland anyway at that time. So I think that there's their story, only Ajax, that Cruyff team, which had that similar local feel to it, were in any way in the same ballpark, and because of how football is, it'll never be done again.
Mm, yeah, away from Tartan Corner. what about Istanbul? Obviously, with Liverpool, the Manchester United psychodrama at the end of the 99 final. Any of those register?
I mean, I was
even Man United in 68.
I was in Istanbul at that game, and that was the most remarkable game of football I've ever been at. Absolutely ludicrous. Not least because of the quality of the Liverpool team on show. but that was astonishing. Yeah, I'd go with that. For Rafa Benitez to have inspired that victory despite all the things that he got wrong at half-time as well, and in this original team selection.
For Jimmy Traore and not Paolo Maldini to be holding the trophy.
Just, yeah, it was what a night. What an incredible night that was.
There's been a lot of talk about the future of the Champions League in recent days. The Premier League clubs have come out against the idea that there should be a qualification should be almost historical. There should be more first round groups so everyone gets more money. If you're a big club, rich gets richer, forget about the poor. Where is the Champions League going? How important is this stand by the Premier League clubs, if there is going to be a stand by them, against what I would see and what many people would see is an unnecessary dilution of the Champions League?
Well, we are on a collision course, and it's between the two biggest leagues in the world, which are the Champions League and the Premier League. And from a business, I mean, before we talk about romance, from a business point of view, I don't see the need for the Premier League to go along with any of this, because they've actually got the best product, the richest product. And the only way that the European clubs can catch up is by turning the Champions League into something that makes as much money for them as English clubs get from the Premier League. So if the Premier League agreed to allow the Champions League to expand to become effectively, you know, a 30 game a season, a weekly league competition, it'd make no business sense. They'd be allowing Bayern Munich and Real Madrid and all that sort of stuff to get a big piece of the pie that they're already cutting up. And then to talk about romance, I mean, if you take the idea of merit out of football, it just becomes an anathema to football fans. You can't do that. And that's the worst thing about it. Not the concept of a European league, it's the fact of a European league just based on name and past glory rather than current merit that has to be resisted. But that's not why the Premier League clubs will resist it. It's business reasons that they'll resist it. Yeah.
And those internal sort of business dynamics, Dom, you know, there's a lot of talk about the top six clubs getting up to £75 million more than the rest due to this new overseas TV deal. Are they sowing the seeds of the Premier League's decline, because the gap will be cut? You know, it's already massive. It will get bigger.
Well, yeah, they are. Not that they'll care, but they are. I think we remember, go back to the autumn onset of winter. We were all sitting here complaining that there weren't enough shocks in the Premier League anymore, and that the lower ranked teams weren't achieving the startling, eye catching victories over the elite. That balance was redressed a bit over the winter with, you know, Leicester beating City and Palace winning at City, etc. And Arsenal's sort of wobble, Spurs' recent wobble. But that's what we want to see. We don't want to see two teams every year just running away with it and not losing any games en route. It can't just be a tete-a-tete between two teams. It's got to be four, five, six, going for the league title, and then other things to play for within that division. And you're getting the odd surprise like a Leicester City coming through. We'll always look back at Leicester City's achievement as being the ultimate romance in the Premier League era. Whatever happens, that will probably never be bettered in terms of romance. But you need to give clubs a chance to aspire to achieving that, to emulating what Leicester did. And if you make it a closed shop at the top, then there is no interest there.
Mm-hmm. Well, there seems to be no limit to short-term greed and, frankly, stupidity. Big clubs and their apologists should be careful what they wish for. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.